Welcome to Banana Bites. In this segment of the podcast, we go live on Dataiku's LinkedIn and Twitter every other week to talk to you about the latest in data science and AI. Our 15-minute bites are here to fuel your afternoon snack time with easy-to-digest food for thought. Hi, welcome to Banana Bites. I'm Trevaney.
And I'm Will.
And we are actually your co-hosts of the Banana Data Podcast right there. Wow, I don't know how to point. So if you have not heard the Banana Data Podcast, you are missing out. It is a really fun, short kind of podcast that we host about data science, AI, and sort of everything in between. I'm sure there's a lot in between, right, Will?
Yeah, there's some stuff in between. But yeah, we try to keep it lighthearted and talk about data science and its implications on business in the world.
Yeah. So if you're interested in the podcast, please check us out wherever you listen to podcasts, basically. But right now, what we're doing is sort of this new little featurette called a Banana Bite. And basically, it's us live, so pretty unscripted, talking about whatever's hot, whatever's new in the world of like AI, data science, tech, etc. So welcome to the first ever Banana Bite.
It's good to be here. Let's get into it, Trevaney.
Let's do it. So what do you want to talk today about, Will?
I want to talk to you about Zoom bombing.
Oh boy, wait. I feel like I know what this is.
Yeah, Zoom bombing, this kind of reminds me of last episode we talked about deepfakes, right?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know what a deepfake was. So now you don't know what Zoom bombing is. We're getting old, Trevaney. But so Zoom bombing, just quickly, I'm sure everyone watching knows, but Zoom, the really powerful and also commonly adopted video conferencing software has the security flaw where if Trevaney and I are in a meeting and you somehow have the URL, the link to this meeting, you can bomb in. You can drop into this meeting and suddenly someone else could show up in our Zoom meeting. They could be doing inappropriate stuff. They could be learning our secrets, all bad stuff. So Zoom bombing is an issue. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Zoom bombing, Zoom privacy, security, usability, kind of some of the things that are going on there and how they might relate to data science.
Yeah. And I mean, this is super relevant because so many people are using Zoom right now. Dataiku uses it for all of our internal stuff. And I've had to sort of learn how to adjust my own use of it, right? Like by putting passwords on and waiting rooms and all these other crazy things. So it is really a problem. But there's more to the issue of security for Zoom than just like the Zoom bombing, right? So I'm curious, Will, what are like the other things that I guess people might need to be aware of?
Yeah, so just to briefly set the stage here, and this is not necessarily a conversation about Zoom, though I will say in doing my research on this topic, at first I was like, Zoom bombing, you know, you kind of have to know if you're using Zoom and you don't have a password on your meeting, like you should maybe have a red flag go up that even though presumably you trust Zoom, if what you're discussing in that meeting is so sensitive, like to some extent, I feel like maybe it's on the users a little bit too to try to prevent Zoom bombing. Maybe that's wrong, but maybe it's a little bit on the users. But I then learned that actually Zoom has a somewhat checkered past, right? Way back when they were found out to be sharing data without user consent to Facebook. Also, some people have recently found that in the Zoom application installation, there's some security flaws. Also, Zoom said that they were doing some encryption of data that was kind of less than what they were really doing. So the short on Zoom is that they're not necessarily doing the best job, but I want to talk more broadly about how like Zoom, to my mind, has pursued this rapid growth strategy. You know, they've gotten a lot of people on the platform. They have all these fun new features like breakout rooms. That's great. And I think to their detriment and our detriment, they've neglected, you know, the bread and butter fundamentals of security and reliability. So tis Zoom, I guess.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, for sure. Right. There is that problem. But I don't think that's very uncommon for what we've seen from high growth startups in this space, right? Like Facebook, right? So, okay, Zoom was sharing data with Facebook, but Facebook had its own share of data privacy and lots of other crazy things that was going on. So I think anytime you're in a very high demand, high growth industry or like this product that you've made is like all of a sudden super useful or everybody wants it, you're necessarily going to focus on how to quickly scale and less on is our underlying infrastructure secure is our underlying infrastructure like good?
Yeah, I guess if you are, let's not say Zoom, if you're one of these companies that's in that situation, like the charitable view is that, hey, they're just trying to make the users happy. So the users say, hey, I want breakout rooms. Can you focus your energy on making me breakout rooms? And so they're just a good product-driven company that's thinking about customer value. So they make breakout rooms. But then, right, like Steve Jobs always said, you know, you don't give the customer what they say they want. You give the customer what they want, but they don't know that they want. And now in this case, it's like, oh, maybe I didn't know that preventing my Zoom meetings from Zoom botting was so important to me, but now I realize that it is. So again, poorly done on Zoom for not thinking ahead and prioritizing that even more crucial feature over some of the sexier but less essential features.
Well, and I think they've prioritized like ease of use, right? You can just go in and click on someone's Zoom link and get taken to a download page, download and go, right? And so I think that usability is why so many people have gravitated towards them recently. But it does come, right, at the cost of like building out a system that can be more robust and more secure.
Yeah, and so that touches on a nice theme, just kind of the contrast between usability and security. And so like we deal with it with our clients all the time. If I'm some, and so this is moving away from the world of video conferencing and just the world of data science. If you want access to a data set, and again, we kind of talked about this on our last podcast, right? Finding and accessing data within an organization. But even once you found it, who has security to access particular bits of information? Like you want to be data driven, so you want broad usability, but presumably the data that you have internally is somewhat proprietary, it's somewhat sensitive. So how you trade off between those two, I think, is an interesting discussion.
Yeah, definitely that. And when you think about like not just security from a privacy of data standpoint, but also like the responsible use and development with whatever data you have, right? I think we have a tendency as data scientists to like build fast and break fast, or I can't remember the exact saying.
Sure. Build things and break things, something like that.
Build and break fast, right? Okay. So yes, you need to prototype, you need to iterate, but I do think that that sometimes comes at the cost of what are the implications of what we're doing if we're doing it this fast, right? And I think that's where Zoom, that's where all these other high growth startups, they kind of miss the discussion where they're just like, no, we can do it. So let's just do it.
Yeah. Right? And I think whether it's an individual data scientist at a large organization or whether it's another startup, I think when you have bad actors who mess up before you, it makes your life harder going forward. So if I work for Corporation X and I say, hey boss, you know, I think I can build a great predictive model. It can help our business. It can help our clients. It's going to save the world. I can do everything I need to do with all my awesome data science skills. You just got to give me access to the data. I think what you're saying is, oh, well, we need to work with that person to act responsibly. But in reality, because of prior bad actors, we're not even given that chance. It's like, hey, someone before you got access to the data. They shouldn't have access to the data. They leaked it or they did something inappropriate. And so therefore, you're cut off. Never again. That's not ideal, but I think that's currently the way things tend to work.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if people can start building out reasonable ways to go about addressing either security flaws or privacy flaws or whatever other issues come up in tech and data science, then at least we can recreate some element of trust that then allows us to start pushing the boundaries, but in a way that doesn't like create more potential harm. Right. And so like, that's where like Zoom, you know, it's an interesting issue for them because they obviously have a product that's really quick and easy to use and they've clearly built it very fast. But maybe now it's time for a little self-reflection, right? And like figuring out the right next steps.
Yeah. I guess just on that point, right? It's one thing that's like the technophile in me thinks is that you always can. I guess previously I was talking about how we can't just trust people if we give them access to data, for example. We can't just say, hey, you hopefully were taught to use data in a responsible way or to build responsible algorithms. We need to have systems in place that restrict them, but we can do that, right? Like there are measures that you can put in place that can say, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, right? If you're building an algorithm, we gave you access to data, we need to make sure that the output of that algorithm gets run through some subpopulation analysis so we know that algorithm is performing up to some standard. So also making a case here for like after the fact, post hoc testing.
Yeah, for sure. I just, as in the course of our conversation, I just remembered that line from Jurassic Park, which was like, we were so obsessed with trying to figure out if we could do it, we didn't stop to think if we should.
Ooh.
So I don't know if Zoom is the new Jurassic Park or not.
Deep cut.
Deep cuts.
Yeah, right. Speaking of deep cuts.
Speaking of deep cuts, thanks, Will, for that little segue. So you know that I'm obsessed with bananas because of this podcast, right?
Yeah, it's weird.
It's not weird. It's just that we have a banana data podcast. We did banana facts. We did facts that are bananas. Now we're doing these live banana bites. And I thought to like keep in theme, we would have a little segment in our bites called Banana Split.
Okay. So tell me more about this banana split you're envisioning.
Yes. So a true banana split, right? When you like go to Dairy Queen or whatever, you have a banana, they cut it in half, and then they put ice cream in the middle. And then you just eat the ice cream and throw away the banana.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah, but here we're actually going to talk about the split. So what I was thinking was we can kind of take a topic or some sort of debate and talk about the two sides of the split. And maybe we debate ourselves. I don't know. We usually debate anyway, so it's not a big deal. But
yeah, maybe we'll agree. Maybe we won't.
Okay, maybe we won't.
What do you want to split on?
Yes. So I wanted to talk about the sort of debate right now between write your own algorithm versus out of the box stuff, right? Because now there's been so much development in the data science space, so much in AI that's been done. You can pretty much do anything out of the box, right? Between Python, R, Keras, TensorFlow, all these great things. You can kind of just kind of plug and play and do some data science. There are those that argue, well, no, you shouldn't just do it that way. If you want to run an algorithm, you should write it from scratch.
Okay. So I like this split. I mean, I think to my mind, the split's doesn't hold a ton of weight. So here's what I mean by that. Like, again, for people who are watching who may not be clear, or maybe they already are, but let's think about something like neural networks that we've talked about a lot in this program in the past, deep learning, as people like to call it now, because it sounds more mysterious. So a convolutional layer is a type of layer in a neural network architecture. And so to actually code and convolve a convolutional layer, like it's a non-trivial, at least I find it non-trivial. It's hard to actually write code to do that. So now you can just say, import Keras, Keras add convolutional layer. It's just like two lines of code. So that's what you're talking about when you describe the second half of the split, right? Mm-hmm. Using these libraries that are abstracting away some of the underlying algorithm, making your life easier.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I don't see how that's inferior, though we could talk about ways in which perhaps it's inferior, but that seems great because it's allowing you to prototype more quickly. You're standing on the shoulders of giants. And then crucially, and we've talked about this on the Banana Data podcast in the past about open source, the vast majority of libraries that people are using, or I would suggest people use, like you shouldn't be using libraries that you can't access the underlying source code for. I think that's not a good decision.
Yeah.
So you should be using something open source like Keras. And if you are, you can always go in and say, hey, the way Keras actually implements a convolutional layer, it's not quite right. Like I have my PhD in statistics and I think it should be different. You can make that change. So I feel like you're getting a free lunch. You're getting the best of both worlds when you're using this second approach, like these pre-built libraries you're describing.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I think we're on the same side of the split this time.
They never thought it would happen on the first
never,
one.
Never, first time we but actually agreed.
So on this point then, when is it good to write your own? So I have some thoughts on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could tell me when you think it would be appropriate. I mean, the one thing that does stand out playing off this idea of open source is intellectual property. So we at DataIQ, Trevaney and I, the Banana Data podcast, I think we try to promote openness and open source and kind of giving back to the data science community. These seem to be like laudable values. However, if I hire some real whiz of a data scientist and they know something about algorithms that no one else in the world knows, then it does make sense that you might want them to build something completely from the ground up, maybe in a different language, maybe in a proprietary language, and then not open source that because that becomes part of your valuable intellectual property.
I mean, I think it's a trade-off. I don't think the average data scientist should be like spending a great deal of time trying to develop a brand new algorithm, but they should be spending a lot of time figuring out how to use what's available in the best way possible for their actual question they're trying to answer.
Yeah. So, and I thought you were going to ask me about AutoML, which is similar but different. kind of this concept.
I have very strong feelings.
Completely roll your own versus just importing open source libraries. Yeah. Maybe I taste an oncoming banana split to Randy for our next episode.
We'll see. We'll see how I feel about it in a little bit. So we're just coming up on time. You know, we want to keep these bites short and sweet and fun, which I think it has been generally. So Will and I think we're going to sign off. But if you liked what you heard slash saw, you should check out the Banana Data Podcast in the corner there.
Right above you, yeah.
Yeah. And I think we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
See you next time.
Bye. And that's all we have for our Banana Bites today. To catch our live segments, follow Data IQ on LinkedIn or Twitter for bi-weekly live streams.